Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Open Minds Radio with your host Alejandro Rojas.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. All right, as our show gets cooler and more technical, and we have more to offer, like the live video on Ustream, there's more for me to control. But luckily, I've got it all done. I'm surprised. I thought I was going to screw something up, like not muting it or something. But we are good. And actually, we've got a guest in studio. And our guest I'm real excited about is Daniel Pace today, and he is a movie director among very many other things, and he is going to be talking about a movie he had put together recently called Appearance of a Man. Luckily, I got to see it last week on a special screening for MUFON, the local Phoenix MUFON. So we're going to be talking to him about his movie. It's kind of abstract and, you know, going into, I think, what a lot of you all – and what I love to talk about in this field. I'm a big fan of John Mack, and so this movie goes into kind of more than just the nuts and bolts, and we'll be talking about that because we have a lot of researchers and nuts and bolts kind of guys on here, so it should be a nice change of pace. And in fact, he is going to tell us how. It's not ready today, but he's going to tell us how we can watch the movie for free that Open Mind listeners are going to be able to listen or watch the movie for free in a couple weeks here. But a couple things. I want to say thank you to UFO Paranormal Network for having the show on the air around the world through Joe Montandel's UFO Paranormal Network. That's always exciting. So we get a lot of UK and Australian fans out there, and you guys are awesome. So it's always cool, too, to see you more and more on our Facebook. Also, I want to say hello and thank you to our Glastonbury radio listeners, because recently we're also being syndicated in Glastonbury, so that's kind of cool. So as the ETs are making their crop circles, they listen to Open Minds Radio, so that's really cool. But let's start and get into the news so we can talk to Daniel. He's got a lot of very interesting things to say, and there's a lot of very interesting news. I've already told you about Gary McKinnon, a lot about Gary McKinnon, and he is in the news again because yet again he lost another appeal to keep from being extradited to the United States. And we've talked a lot about who he is and what he's done, and if you're new to the show, you know, this was the guy who hacked into some computer databases in order to look for some information on UFOs. And now he's in a lot of trouble. Unfortunately, he says he forgot a lot of what he did see because he was too stoned during the time. And now he's going to do a lot of time in jail. And unfortunately, it's looking more and more like it's not going to be a nice, cushy UK jail. He's going to have to come to America. And I'm sure they watch all those shows. He's probably seen Cool Hand Luke, and he's deathly afraid of being brought out here. But you can also Tweet for Gary. There's a new site, tweetforgary.co.uk, tweetforgary.co.uk, where you can join this Twitter following group and get information on Gary McKinnon. And just by joining, you're showing support that you want Gary to stay in the UK or be freed or whatever you think. Some people think he should go to jail. He just, you know, should be able to stay in the UK and do this. Some people think they should free him. And some people think that he should come to the United States and face the worst possible punishment for being akin to a terrorist and breaking into computers and stuff like that. I think it was pretty innocent what he was doing. I think why not let him stay out there in the UK? But, you know, everybody can argue what their opinion is there. Another interesting news story, of course, if you're following the news, you can see that on UFOthinktank.com, and you can join our Yahoo News group. Also, I'm still sending these out to MUFON people, and it goes to the MUFON list. So a couple days ago, I sent out a story that has really hit the internet big, and that was this weird cloud over Moscow. People have seen, and it was kind of a cloudy area, and there's this light ring in Moscow. It's a very cool-looking picture, very weird video of this cloud, and now it's been the front page of Yahoo News, and it's gone all over the world, and people are asking me on a regular basis, hey, did you see that cloud in Moscow? And I was like, yeah, you know, if you paid attention to the emails I sent out, no, yeah, you would have seen it a few days ago. But really cool, interesting news out of Moscow, and I think if you're watching the Ustream live video, we had that picture up there for a second. Yep, there it is. Yeah, you can see it there, Daniel. Pretty weird picture. So, what else in the news? Let me get back to that page. In the news, Mystery Quest. You might have seen a new TV show last night. There's a really good show, kind of a cryptozoological show called Monster Quest out there. And in fact, they've featured Open Minds a little bit. They have this creature that we call Pepe, but this weird creature found in Mexico that have purchased and we're bringing back here to experiment on because people so far can't figure out what this thing is. Monster Quest has done a lot of really great stuff. And they created a new show to cover more paranormal called Mystery Quest. And the first episode was on last night. And a couple weeks ago, we had MUFON's new PR guy on, Mark Easter. And he was talking to us about this show and some other things, but he was featured on this television show. So way to go for Mark getting out there as the PR guy for MUFON and being on this great television show on the History Channel last night. They covered Area 51 and other UFO type of stuff. They took in this camera that was like a 66-time zoom and really zoomed in on these buildings in Area 51, and they had some other experts. I was able to watch it last night. Luckily, I recorded it, but I couldn't hear all of it because I kept getting phone calls the whole time. But it looked like a really great show, and they used Mark a lot and talked about MUFON a lot. So he did a great job there. So hats off to the work they've done there. Also, China, some new China news that they had a conference, actually, that is about astronomy and UFOs, a huge conference going on. And if you remember the Purple Mountain Observatory, that was in the news not too long ago because China, during the eclipse that happened recently, they had a lot of people that saw UFOs. A lot of people took pictures, some people took video, and the Purple Mountain Observatory had taken a photo of something. They said it wasn't a UFO, it was an unidentified object. But not a UFO, they clarified. I'm not sure what they meant there, and people were confused. But the government's still looking at that picture, and they're supposed to be coming out at what they're going to say, the Chinese government. However, there's still lots of very compelling pictures and video that was taken from that incident. And then probably finally is Germany had some sightings as well recently, and actually a lot of people are saying, because it sounds like it was a meteor, but still people were amazed by this, and people are saying, hey, we've seen meteors, and that wasn't a meteor, but that hit pretty big news, some news out of northern Germany. And finally, some late-breaking news, which is kind of scary, and I there's probably even more info right now. I haven't been able to see it in the last half hour, but there's saucer-shaped Mylar balloon that looks like a UFO was launched over Fort Collins, Colorado, near where I lived, and actually I was in charge of a paranormal lecture group out there for a while. But unfortunately, a little kid crawled up in this big balloon and let go of the string and floated off in this balloon, and he was like 7,000 feet above the sky. Police helicopters and everything were following him. As the helium leaked out of the balloon, it came to the earth gently, but when it came to the ground, the little boy wasn't in it. So that was just kind of scary. They're hoping that he didn't fall out of it at some point. They're hoping that maybe he fell out early on and is hiding because he's afraid of his dad being mad at him. But really scary. Hopefully the kid is okay. But yeah, it was on the news. CNN was following it, and they were following this balloon with news helicopters and everything. But it was lost sight of quite a few times, and especially early in its launch. So hopefully the little guy had fallen out earlier, or but his brother said they saw him crawl up in there and let go of the string and float off. So we'll have to see what happens with that one. You can probably go to CNN.com and find out more. But that is the UFO news for the week. I'm going to turn up Daniel's microphone. Now that I've done the news, I'll have more time to look in the chat for your questions. So if you guys have any questions, feel free to pop those into the Blog Talk or the Ustream chat, and I'll be sure to get to those. It's a little bit of time delay, but you can see us right there, Daniel. But I'll welcome our guest, Daniel Pace.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me.
Welcome to the Open Mind Studio.
Thank you.
So you made a movie. Are you a Phoenix native or Arizona native?
Well, I'm not a native from Arizona. I've been here since 1990.
Mm-hmm.
I'm originally from Argentina, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
When did you come to the United States?
I came in 1980.
Okay.
But I went to Miami, actually. And mm-hmm. then I came to Phoenix in 1990.
Mm-hmm.
I've been here since then.
Okay, in 1990.
Yeah.
So, and then at that point, not too long after that, we had the Phoenix Lights incident where people
yep.
had seen... Many, many hundreds of people saw these UFOs over Arizona.
Right.
Where were you when that happened?
Actually, I was here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very funny because everybody thinks that I actually saw the lights, and I didn't, unfortunately. And but I hear about it the next day, and I hear all the discussions, and, you know. But I was here, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did you see it on the news, or were you one of the witnesses yourself?
No. I saw it on the news.
Okay.
And I never saw the lights myself.
Okay. This guy right here who is just walking behind the cameras, Jason, he actually saw it.
I met many people who actually saw the lights, absolutely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's funny. There's usually we have this little doll at that seat, and people are wondering, where'd he go? Is that him? Is he animated now? But, yeah, he's just right over here, ladies and gentlemen, who are asking for Chico Spock. Some of the people named him Chico Spock. But anyway, so that sighting, the Phoenix Lights, was actually, it's in your movie. And what role did it play in inspiring you to make the movie?
So... when I first heard about the Phoenix Lights, like most people in Phoenix, I was very curious, you know, because there were not a few people, but hundreds of people that have seen the lights, and they were describing them as something unlikely to be from, you know, man-made. So I was very curious from that point of view, and I started, you know, talking to witnesses. Actually, it was very hard to find witnesses. I mean, a lot of people either knew somebody that saw the lights or saw the lights themselves, so it wasn't a very difficult thing. And I started getting very curious, but my curiosity expanded on the entire phenomenon, not just this occurrence, because this is not an isolated thing that happened in Phoenix in 1997. Lights had been seen throughout the world,
mm-hmm.
And not only you know, recently, but also throughout history. And so I became very curious, and I look at the lights more as a greater phenomenon of something bigger than just this particular occurrence and trying to figure out what exactly this was. Obviously, if the more you look into the explanations, the more it doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, the explanations really don't make sense when you start analyzing, you know, the reports from the witnesses. You know, it's just if it was a military, aircraft of some kind, it was definitely very, very, very massive, mm-hmm. and very, very big. So we will know about a project like that, or at least somebody will know. And I don't know how you can hide something like that. And I'm quoting, you know, paraphrasing some of the witnesses, you know, that mentioned that. So I like the. So I started looking into this, not from the point of view of making a film, but even though I was, you know, the idea was interesting. But I came across a gentleman that from Mexico that actually witnessed lights, but also had a very interesting story. And the story was that his family had been having contact for many, many years, and it started with his grandfather. So he told me, you know, the first thing he told me when I met him was, I saw the lights and I know what they are. So from that point of view, I became very interested, and he told me, you know, a lot of things, and that it started to fit within a pattern that I was hearing from different witnesses, that this is a phenomenon that is not just these lights that appear in Phoenix, but is part of it something bigger, a greater phenomenon that involves also contact and involves paranormal activity. And involves even historical events that have been registered, you know, even if you look back thousands of years ago in the Bible itself. So at that point, I realized, you know, I think there's a story here, and I'm going to make a film about it. And but I don't want to make the traditional, you know, typical UFO film where they actually, you know, actually showing a UFO and aliens coming out of it and, you know, mm-hmm. with some type of message or destroying the earth. But I really listened to the witnesses and people that had experiences with contact, and not only people that had experiences in Phoenix, but, you know, around the world. It's amazing when you start opening up, when you open up that kind of worms, you know, how many emails you start getting from people, you know, throughout the world, mm-hmm. that had experiences. And, you know, while some of the accounts that I was getting, you know, I kind of disregarded in some way because I was getting so many, a great majority of them had similarities. And you start questioning, you know, well, you know, if all these people are hallucinating, they're hallucinating the same things. Mm-hmm. And that caught my attention quite a bit. And I decided to make a film that, as much as possible, try to reproduce what an experience is like. Mm-hmm. And what, and of course, you know, it's impossible in one single film to try to portray the different type of experiences, because
right.
people, you know, had bad experiences, good experiences, mm-hmm. abductions, and there's all kind of different type of activity out there, right? But I tried to go not so much in the nuts and bolts of what the lights were made of, but rather into a more broad, more philosophical question about what is this phenomena that mm-hmm. is happening, you know?
The gentleman you said you had talked to who said he knew what mm-hmm. what it was all about. What did he say? What did he feel?
Well, he is a long story. Number one, I mean, mm-hmm. you know, that's one of the things that this type of subject, I mean, if I wish I had a 25 words or less answer, mm-hmm. you know, because I have to make a
26
full,
is fine.
You know, the answers are not simple.
Right.
If the answers for the UFO phenomena were simple, we wouldn't be talking about it right now,
mm-hmm.
because everybody will know about it. It will be, you know, available freely. you know, religion will be talking about it, or a new kind of religion will be talking about it, and scientists will be, you know, have books written about it. The fact is, it's not a simple, it doesn't have a simple explanation. But there are certain aspects of it that we can agree upon, you know, and it has to do with experiences. It may not exactly have to do with a pretty picture that shows exactly, or some type of wreckage or metal, you know, that we can analyze and say, okay, oh, this is, you know, from this, you know, planet or from a different dimension, you know. But one conclusion I came to is that there is no separation between miracles, angels, aliens, mysticism, spirituality, reincarnation. It's all part of one thing. It's all, you know, part of that greater, you know, aspect of reality that we're not necessarily aware of, and that's why we call it, you know, paranormal.
Right.
I don't think the UFO is an isolated, you know, activity that we can completely isolate it from the rest. It's all part of it, of the same thing. And in my research that I did, I didn't, you know, by the way, I'm not a ufologist. I'm not, you know, I never was involved in it, only from a curiosity, distant curiosity point of view. But I became very curious, because I was seeing the sincerity in the witnesses and in the people that had experiences. But most importantly, in many of them there was a transformational aspect. These people went through a transformation. This was not just, you know, oh, I'm seeing this in the sky and let me go on with my life. And you know, this is something that transformed their lives. When you are in the presence of something so magnificent, so, you know, inexplicable, you know, so, you know, hard to completely comprehend, that your senses are going, I cannot make sense of this.
Right.
Because I never been in the presence of something like this. It produces something, even if this person, these people didn't have any contact. It produces a transformational effect. It transforms your life. Because all of a sudden you were a witness of something beyond your reality.
Yeah.
So it challenges the way you perceive reality.
Yeah, a lot of, you know, for me, coming about this at I think a pretty pragmatic way, going once I found the reality of it and interviewing people, I came to what I believe is that these things aren't on accident, that these sightings, it's not just, caught you off guard and I saw you flying by. And what I thought was amazing to me, to kind of allude to what you're saying, which seems unfathomable even, is that there does seem to be a connection with the what they're seeing and them. There were so many people I had talked to who said, we looked at it, and as soon as we noticed it, it changed course and it moved towards us. Or we started looking at it and it was really curious, and eventually some point it changing course and moving towards them, or disappearing and reappearing right above them or around them, showing some sort of interaction with their mind or their thoughts and its movements. And that seems incredible. It seems impossible, especially if they're spotting something miles away, but something people reported.
Because it defies completely logic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't see in our lifetime, at least, you know, we don't see airplanes doing 90-degree turns.
Right.
And or disappearing rapidly. Or lights that appear to be transparent or translucent or, you know, made out of some type of watery material or changing form or morphing into something else. It completely defies our understanding of what is real and what is not real.
Mm-hmm.
And the phenomena of UFO, I think, cannot be isolated, and you know, and I think it's very valid, you know, to trying to analyze it from a very, you know, material point of view, like, you know, what materials you made of, or, you know, let's take pictures of that. I think you have to look at it from a bigger perspective as well, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that we cannot understand with our understanding of science today. And that's the reason why there is no easy explanation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, many times I've done interviews with the mainstream media, and they want to know, well, what is it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, if I tell you, I will need, you know, 10 hours, and you will probably fall asleep.
Yeah.
And or most likely, you will not even understand. So it's a very, very complex subject. You know, and but I think there's enough out there to present the material to at least ask questions.
Yeah. One thing I didn't do, which is kind of funny, and I'll tell people why now, just in case they're curious, is I didn't tell people what the movie was about. I said, you know, the Phoenix Lights kind of inspired it. But that's because it's hard to define what the movie is about, which is it's kind of about what we're talking about. It's that long explanation of what's going on. How would you define, what do you say? Because I know being a movie maker, people want to ask you, what's it about? And then you have
sure.
to answer.
Yeah. What is it about is very simple. It's about two characters that have contact with a higher being.
Mm.
And this contact produces a transformational effect in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And they themselves, at least one of them, experience very paranormal activity or experiences
mm-hmm.
in his life. Now, there is a relationship with the lights in the sense that there is a connection. It has been reported that there's been incidents of lights and UFOs in contact. So there is a connection there. There is, you know, and that's one thing that I try to with the film, which is, by the way, fictional in the sense of it's a drama, it's a story that is, you know, fictitious in the sense of the story itself, but it's based on real experiences. Now I'm not saying that exactly happened the night of March 13, 1997, but I present this as a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
I present this as a what if, because so many similar situations have been reported around the world, and I had a couple witnesses that go along with the story, right? That I portray in the film. So the film is a story about contact, to put it in a few words.
So, and that leads me to that next question, and hopefully that explains, helps the people out, because as you can see, we've been talking about that, and the answer to that, what is content, is difficult. But you said that you started talking with people who had experiences,
mm-hmm.
and they went through transformations. Did you see patterns in what those people were having to say and what they were experiencing?
Yes, and that was one of the criteria that I used, you know, in accepting or rejecting a particular witness story. Not rejecting it because I didn't think it was true, but accepting it in the sense that it fit the theme that I wanted to show in the film. The contact in this case is with a higher being that has I wouldn't say a message, but it has a way of helping mm-hmm. or a way of directing these people that had the contact in a particular direction. In other words, to transform their lives, you know,
right.
to make them go in a different direction as the direction that they're going. And I found many stories like that, you know, where people had this type of contacts. So I was seeing that the patterns were similar. The contact was not obvious. I do believe that there are people right now having contact that they don't know that they are.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same kind of situation where you mentioned before, you know, some people look in the sky and they don't see anything,
mm-hmm.
and others see something. It has to do with a lot of things, like intuition. You know, people that have this type of intuition about certain things that may happen, you know, some people that have psychic abilities, right, that we cannot explain. How can they do? Well, they are connected.
Mm-hmm.
They are more connected than others. It's like it's a skill or it's a capacity of that person, you know, to be able to have this tremendous intuition, this tremendous connection. And there are people that have contact that they don't know. You know, maybe it was a stranger that they dismiss, you know, that they say, oh, you know, what is, you know, leave me alone. And others that somehow allow the connection. And it happens in the reports that I gather, you know, from witnesses, is that these connections were not obvious. It wasn't like, hello, I'm an alien and I want to help you.
Mm-hmm.
It was more in terms of clues and suggestions and options, because at the end, it's all about options of life, right? And we need to make decisions. But the decisions are up to us. It's not up to somebody to make it for us. And there was a consistency of that, you know, of that particular message. You make the decision, but in order to make the right decision, you have to look inside, because you cannot make that decision based on what somebody says. Otherwise, you are being, somehow suggested, right?
Mm-hmm.
The decision has to come from inside you, and that implies a connection to your own intuitions. And what is that? Well, it's the connection to perhaps a repository of greater intelligence, where you're gonna obtain the type of, you know, intuition or intelligence, you know, to make the right decision. But without getting too philosophical about it, the contact has that pattern. You know, it had there were two types, or many types, but the ones I concentrated were prophetic, in the sense that something may happen, but not necessarily to you or you know, and suggestions of, you know, choose, you know. There is one particular scene in the story where a particular character, you know, has to choose between turning left or turning right at a road where there's a fork on the road, right? That's very allegorical, obviously, of the kind of decisions that you have to make in your own life. And sometimes we make decisions based on bad advice or because of pressure, you know, we make a particular decision. So there were patterns there of helping, but not helping, you know, not giving us the fish, but teaching us how to fish.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the stories that I capture and that I wanted to portray. I hear about also stories where that were, you know, very negative, and it had different type of consequences, you know, in like abductions and things like that. This is not that movie.
Mm-hmm.
And just because it's not portraying the movie doesn't mean I don't believe in it or it doesn't exist.
Right.
It's just that this is the area that I wanted to investigate and to make a film about.
Mm-hmm. You probably heard of John Keel. He was a researcher who passed away recently, and he focused a lot in a similar area. Of course, Mothman Prophecies was a popular movie that was similar with the prophecy and things like that.
But it's also, I want to say something else about the patterns, because I always thought, you know, that the UFO was a modern phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was my view of the world prior to making the film, and my view of the world right now is completely different. But to me, it was like something that it was new. But then, if you start looking in history, and you go back into the, you know, biblical writings and other religious books, you see that many of these passages are descriptions of UFOs, of alien contact, that in the context of the times, you know, they you know, call it a divine type of contact or a contact with an alien. You know, I use the slogan in the film, you know, 2,000 years ago we called them angels, today we call them aliens, because I do believe it's all part of the same thing.
And I was glancing at the chat while we were talking and I was listening, but you know, they're asking, is he looking at the chat? Is he over here looking at the chat?
I'm too far from the chat. Yeah. I can't look at the chat.
I'm looking at it. If you guys had a question, you know, put that in, and I'll be sure to ask it. And I'll look closer right now. So type it right now. Hurry. Oh, they missed out. But I think people are asking, and I'll get to that. And a lot of the pictures, because we've got some pictures of the movie showing on here, there's, of course, priests, and the main character is a priest. So there's a religious aspect to it. I guess the first question I'm curious about is, do you feel that then, and you kind of already touched on it actually, that the religious experiences with angels and those sort of experiences, do you see the patterns between those experiencers and the UFO experiencers to be similar?
Well, let's look at what angels are, you know, from a very pragmatic point of view. They're higher beings, right? They're beings that are spiritually more evolved than we are. I think it's in all of us to achieve that level of evolution, you know, spiritually. And that's what I think what angels at the end are, right? One of the things I don't do in the film is trying to distinguish between aliens or angels. There is no, you know, neon sign that says alien, you know. I leave up to the audience, you know, to for them to make up in their own minds what is it, you know, that they saw. It's very funny because, you know, actually it's not funny, it's very real, that people that have seen the film, especially in a lot of film festivals that we've been, people interpretations of the characters is based on their religious convictions and their religious filters, you know. And I've been, the movie played in Europe, and the audience was, you know, there were a lot of Europeans and Asians and Egyptians as well. And they all had a different view. These were not necessarily people that are into the UFO movement or anything like that. And many have their own views because it fits with some, at some level, it fits with their beliefs or their core beliefs in their religious convictions,
right.
You know.
Right.
So, and I did that on purpose because I do believe, based on the information I was given, you know, by the people that had experiences, that it's all about one thing. You know, there is no separation. We made those separations. We,
right,
as humans, put names, labels, because we like to, you know, catalog things, you know. So, and, you know, at different times in history, we had to come up with some explanation, right? And those are labels put by us, you know. And it's about time, I think, that we come up with more universal view of all this phenomena, and especially, you know, the higher beings, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, along with that, there's a character who's very enigmatic in the movie. You don't know who he is. In your mind, was he supposed to represent anyone in particular?
I leave that for the audience.
Which is cool. Which is funny that what you had said is how people kind of made their own assumptions.
Right.
And I had myself.
Mm-hmm.
And up until hearing, you know, that this is an enigmatic character and everybody had these other perspectives on what it was, you know, it made me think, and I was like, wow, he tricked me, you know, he got
right.
me.
Well, the whole point with the film, you know, one of the things I wanted to do is that I want people to ask themselves questions, you know. I want the film to ask questions, not to be give so much answers as much as, you know, question your own beliefs, question your own, you know, because the only way that we can evolve, you know, is by asking ourselves questions, is by, you know, being curious, is by exploring. It's the only way. And that was one of the goals of the film. You know, I'm not going to just have you sit there and watch something and give you an explanation for everything and you don't have to think. You know, it's a film that you have to participate. Now, there are people that don't want to participate. You know, I always use the analogy of the hypnotist. You know, if you talk to a hypnotist, they say people cannot be hypnotized if they're not willing to be hypnotized. And that's very true. You know, the fact is you got to open your mind to allow the hypnotist through his or her suggestions to let you be hypnotized. You know, there has to be a participation from you in order to achieve that.
Mm-hmm.
And some people don't allow that. They don't want to go there, you know.
Right.
And the same thing happens with people that, you know, some people that see the film that they don't get it or they don't understand it or they don't want to participate in what the film is trying to do, which is trying to get you into the experience of contact, basically.
Mm-hmm. One person had a question in the chat. Were there any Phoenix Lights witnesses in the movie?
In the movie itself or watching the film?
In the movie itself.
No, they're all actors. You know, they're actually, they're all from Phoenix. but well, some were from Tucson, but none of the actors actually saw the lights. It's a very interesting question. I never thought about that. You know?
Well, the original way you started to answer it, I think, is a good question too, because I know when we were there at the MUFON airing or screening, that there were some Phoenix Lights witnesses there.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So I know there have been. What have been their reactions?
Well, I haven't talked to all of them. I talked to a few, and the reaction has been very positive. You know, and because the film, you know, one of the things that I was somewhat scared is that I don't want people to think that I have all the answers on the Phoenix Lights. The movie is a what if, and it presents a bigger picture into understanding phenomena like the Phoenix Lights, right? And some witnesses just, you know, witness the lights, and that's about it, right? And but there were several in the screen we did last week, Harkins Theater. The whole audience was MUFON members and UFO examiner readers, and there were several witnesses there. And we had some very, very interesting, very positive reactions from the witnesses. I haven't talked to all of them, obviously, and in general, the film, I have to tell you the truth, the film has this polarizing aspect where some people reject it completely. It's almost like, it's very interesting because it's almost a rejection of the concept. It's almost a rejection of the idea that the film is trying to, you know, portray, and you know. And for some people, I heard of some people that during the film, they had an out-of-body experience.
Wow.
And that, I mean, obviously to me, that was like also a wow. But it has that effect, you know, and at the same time, it can have an incredibly negative effect where the person, you know, walks out.
I had some angst, and I had to walk out for a minute, but that's because I was trying to hold it for so long. I bought a big drink, and that was a bad idea, and I didn't want to leave, and I had to run out and take care of that. And the chairs were really small. I had to interrupt the people who were next to me, and oh, man. But, you know, along with that, one of the things that it made me think of is, and your idea of people's experiences and being transformed. And what I think is funny, I think you're similar to me in a way, because I know you had said you hadn't had your own sighting. Or did you?
No, I didn't have my own sighting.
Yeah, so you haven't had a sighting. But you made this movie, and like the people in the audience, a lot of the people in the audience and the enthusiasts who want to see your movie are people who have had sightings. Same with me. When I got involved with this, I hadn't had a sighting. But because of other people's sightings and their transformation, the sightings and the effect transcends the people even who have the sightings themselves. I think I just find that interesting that, you know, even with you, you've delved into this arena without having your own experience, but those other experiences have influenced you.
Right. It, you know, from a filmmaker point of view, I mean, you don't have to really be a drunk to write about a drunk, you know. I mean, you can just spend some time with one, and you get all the data.
Yeah.
And you spend time with people that have lived with drunks, and you get a very good idea of what you need to do. I think the same applies here. I spend a lot of time talking to people that had experiences and trying to understand the psyche of it, you know, the whole psychological implications of contact, and not just, you know, I witnessed this and I was incredibly impressed, but actually, what is it to have a contact? You know, what kind of how does it transform your life? What is it? What does it do to you? You know, and for many, it's a very complicated experience. It's not something that every time you experience something that is completely defies any logic. It doesn't go away. I mean, it stays with you forever. And it affects you. It affects your life. It affects everything you do. But in many of these cases, the contact itself, and while the contact lasted, because sometimes it lasts for a long time, sometimes it lasts for a day, or sometimes a couple of days, or sometimes maybe an hour or two, It's something that it has such a great impact, but I was more interested in the ones that lasted for a few days, for instance, and that sort of thing, and how that changes your life, you know. How do you view the world afterwards, mm-hmm. you know, and what kind of transformations you go through, you know, and how those transformations makes you a better person, for instance. And again, I'm not talking about abductions here. That's another subject.
Right, right.
And that was, I spent a lot of time with these people, you know, and trying to understand, you know, every detail, you know, of their lives and what they go through. And I had a situation where there was this person that had contact with the, by the way, not all the contact with the higher beings are men. There are women. And this man had a contact with a woman. Or an entity that appeared like a woman. By the way, the name of appearance of a man comes from Daniel 8:15 in the Bible, where he has a similar experience. I'll go into that later. In this case, the man had contact with a woman, or what appeared to be a woman, you know, and this was the alien, basically. And the man falls in love with her. I never heard anything like that. You know, falling in love with an alien.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very interesting experience. I mean, actually a very sad experience, because it was something that could not be prolonged. You know, it could not exist. And one day she had to go away. It was a very sad story, you know, that I didn't include in the film. Perhaps I'll make another movie about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was Earth Girls Are Easy.
Yeah,
that they found love in that movie.
Oh yeah, yeah, but it in a completely different context.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
A drama.
But what I included in the film from that particular experience is some aspects of it, in you know, that are in the movie.
Mm-hmm. You know, at stepping on, and you wanted to, or transitioning over to what you had mentioned, where you. There were some aspects of this movie, even the title came out of the Bible, and the main character is a priest. Why did you choose a priest to be the experiencer in the movie?
First of all, I'll address the Bible thing. The name of the film comes from the Daniel 8:15 in the Bible, where he's describing an experience where someone appeared before him, an entity, appear before him in the appearance of the man. Depending on the Bible version that you read, it reads differently, but in the older versions, it reads in the appearance of the man. And I used that title because I thought it was very representative of contact described in the Bible. Now, going to your second question about, you know, the why the character is a priest, for a very particular reason, you know, the priest is supposed to have all the answers. First of all, I think you cannot separate religion from any of this. I think while religion has its own messages and ideals and dogma, we're talking about the same phenomenon. So in this particular case, I picked a priest because a priest already has all the answers, at least in his mind, or in the church's mind,
mm-hmm.
right? They have to do with spirituality, with things basically of the paranormal. I mean, what is, you know, religion, but, you know, basically the study of
mm-hmm.
paranormal activity.
That metaphysical subject, really.
Metaphysical, you know, goes into also another direction. But so we start with a character that already has the answers spiritually. And then he realizes that his world is upside down, and he starts experiencing all kind of different things, and clues started to appear in his life, and he's trying to make sense of all these clues, and this mysterious man that is around there, you know, kind of helping him in some way, maybe through, you know, telepathy or something like that. But basically, his life is completely upside down at one point, and he abandons religion at the end. He abandons the priesthood. But there is an important thing here, because abandoning religion doesn't mean you now become an atheist.
Mm-hmm.
What it means, in some cases, at least in the case of the priest, he became more spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
He became, you know, in other words, evolved. He evolved into a higher spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
And he even has some psychic abilities, you know. I think psychic
Okay. All right. Well, it looks, all appearances are that we are back. So sorry about that little delay. And I've got a really great question coming up. Yeah, the video side, it would, one of the sides. We have an audio stream going and
uh-huh.
a video stream. So,
oh, that's...
but I, okay. So I think what you're, if I'm translating this correctly, and which I think is a great concept that I think, hopefully, I think some of the more religious, dogmatic people don't understand about people who say they're spiritual is that, you know, it seems like you find a higher wisdom in some of the passages or at least parts of the Bible. And even though perhaps the church has constraints that in this instance with the priest, which didn't allow him to evolve beyond or to the point where he wanted to be, just because you evolve beyond the dogmatic practices of the church doesn't mean also that you reject some of the wisdom in the writings.
Absolutely, exactly. I mean... The whole idea is to evolve, and evolve doesn't mean rejection. It means, you know, being less fundamentalist about certain ideas. You know, at the end, the Bible was written by man. Now you can argue that it was godly or divinely inspired. It's very possible. There was a witness that I interviewed. This lady didn't have contact, but had a near-death experience. And she died in an operation. She was a very Catholic woman. And she died for, I believe, about an hour or so, and then came back. And she had a near-death experience. Incidentally, her message when she came back, it was very, very similar to some of the experiences that people that had contact with higher beings had. And she said that when she came back, she had a completely different sense of the world and her spiritual beliefs. She didn't go to church anymore. She didn't fit very well within the Catholic Church anymore. But she said something to me that was very telling. I went back and I read the Bible, and there were a lot of things in it that made a lot of sense to me in a much greater way than ever before, or how it has been interpreted by the church and told to me. So I think, you know, there are a lot of truths in the Bible and in other religious books, not necessarily the Bible. And also, let's not forget that there were religious books written 5,000 years prior to the Bible, like the Sumerian texts. And, you know, we can go in there a little bit, but, you know, and I said in the film, you know, all religions are paths that eventually will lead to the same conclusion. If you evolve,
mm-hmm.
if you stay in a box believing your religion, we're going to be 2,000 years from now with 2,000 religions because, you know, we argue with each other about, oh, no, my religion is more perfect than your religion, or mm-hmm. this is the truth and this is yours is not the truth. I think, you know, religions in a way, if I had to criticize it, is it that they have kept us in a box and prevent us from evolving spiritually. And I know a lot of people that are very, very spiritual that are not necessarily religions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, but, you know, getting out of that box doesn't mean you reject everything. Rather, your religion could be your foundation, but also you have the possibility to evolve and ask yourself more questions, more fundamental questions. And at the end, your priest knows about God or divine intervention or the spiritual world or the paranormal as much as you do.
Mm-hmm.
He's just a human being, and that's why the character in the movie is a priest that has all the answers, or that's what he thinks.
Right. I was really shocked once I heard the Dalai Lama say something similar. He was like, "Don't become Buddhist. You know, stay whatever religion you are, because they're all leading to the same path,
right?
And you need to be in your community and grow within your community and help your community along." So
exactly. I mean, it's a very metaphysical concept as well, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought, you know, I think just like you're talking about with the movie being kind of giving you the feeling of having an experience, that the it is interesting, like if the polarization that does happen, mm-hmm. and I'm really interested in when some of these guys in the chat, you know, that come into the chat on a regular basis, and some of the listeners are able to see the movie and see where they go, you know,
yeah.
because some people, it can be like oil and water, you know, they don't,
mm-hmm.
they just don't at this point have a capacity to move over to open up to some things.
Right.
But one of the things, and I wonder if you've found this as well, and maybe this movie's done it, where some people along the path of researching this stuff, even though they don't have that capacity, and maybe you try to turn them on to things that help them move over, it's something that you would never expect that really opens things up for them. Have you seen some people kind of switch over, kind of maybe your movie was even the trigger for that to open up to broader ideas?
I got a lot of emails, you know, from people that have seen the film, you know, and you get all kind of different opinions. But one fundamental thing that it does in a lot of people is that people keep thinking about, you know, the ideas that the movie expresses. And I had many, many people telling me, you know, I kept thinking about it all night, and I woke up in the morning thinking about it, and the images were in my mind, you know, and they didn't go away for a long time. I think if I can achieve that, you know, from, 1% of the people that see the film, I think is something great, because that means that person is asking itself, himself or herself questions.
Mm-hmm.
And without curiosity, you cannot evolve.
Mm-hmm.
You stay where you are forever, you know. And it's amazing what a little curiosity does, because you start questioning things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Einstein had a lot of curiosity about, you know, what he was trying to figure out, and that's what led them, you know, to the theories that he came up with. It was curiosity. Without curiosity, he could never achieve what he achieved.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not something like, say, well, I'm going to discover this. Well, you had to have a lot of curiosity to discover or to find things. You know, the same thing happens, you know, in the spirit. You know, I call it spiritual, for lack of a better word, because I think, you know, this contact, again, has a spiritual dimension, you know, or a paranormal dimension. But without that that seeking element, you know, that desire to find, you will never find.
Mm-hmm.
You know, without the desire to see, you will never see.
Yeah.
You know, it's just as fundamental as that, and as simple as that.
Yeah. You brought up Einstein. One of my favorite quotes along those lines was him talking about how the most important thing to a scientific discovery is wild speculation,
mm-hmm.
and imagination, and how that's so important. There is a question on the chat, and they're asking about the character who had to make that choice between the two different paths. they were asking, they saw the movie apparently, and they're asking what was that scene about and why was it in the film?
Well, the character that they're alluding to was kind of a Vietnam vet that is kind of lost in his life. I mean, living out of his car, going from city to city, and leaving all the decisions that he makes to chance. You know, there's a point in the movie where he actually the alien, whatever you want to call it, asks him a question. You know, and this is the case of which way you want to take. You know, they're basically parked in front of this fork on the road. There are two roads, one on the to the left and the other one to the right. And the alien asks him the question, which way, the right or the left? Which way are you gonna go from now? You know, basically that's an allegory of, it's allegorical of his own life. You know, where are you gonna take your life? Are you gonna keep leaving everything to chance? You know, going from city to city, living out of your car, and drifting, you know, through life. Or you're going to make a decision. So that moment is the moment where he has to make a decision. And what does he do? The first thing he does, he takes a coin and throws it up in the air to see, you know, give it up to chance, you know, to see if he's going to take the right side or the left side. And at that point, the alien leaves, you know, and gets lost in the middle of the desert. And the Vietnam vet goes back to his car and he has to make a decision. And for the first time, he now thinks, or actually he looks, you know, he looks inside himself, you know, and trying to come up with the best decision possible. Well, lucky enough, the best decision that he makes, which is go to the right side, leads him to find, well, I don't want to disclose a lot in the film,
right,
but he finds something,
mm-hmm,
you know, when he takes that turn that most likely will change his life.
Mm-hmm. You know, that scene reminds me of, I'm new to Arizona. I've only been here a few months. So any of the listeners, because, you know, they've gone through this move with me, who want to see what it's like out here in Arizona, that scene in the middle of the desert, you can see.
Yeah.
Was that filmed, I guess, not a lot of the film was filmed here in Phoenix. Where were the different venues that the film was made?
So we film in Phoenix, and we film mostly in Tucson, actually.
Mm-hmm.
We film at a church in Tucson that was just the right church to film at. You know, that we look at a lot of different churches. So we film in Tucson. We also film in Mexico a little bit. So a lot of the and then we film most of the exterior was done in Phoenix. The desert is north of Phoenix, the part that you saw there. So we film a lot on the northern part of Phoenix in the desert area there. And there's some parts that we film around Tucson as well, and, you know, kind of intercut with Phoenix, you know, different neighborhoods and things like that we film over there.
Did you say you filmed a little bit in Jerusalem?
Yeah, there was at the end of the movie where the character goes through some, you know, experience. And there are a lot of effects at the end of the movie. I needed some shots. You know, there's shots of, without giving too much of the film, but there are shots of churches and, you know, lights and all kind of different things that I didn't want to shoot in Arizona. You know, I wanted to have a completely
mm-hmm.
different look. So I had the so I actually filmed that in Jerusalem, in the old city of Jerusalem. Now they're very abstract shots, so you can't pinpoint exactly. I mean, if you've been there, probably you can recognize a few of the things, a few of the shots there. But it was all filmed, you know, in the old city of Jerusalem.
Cool. How was that experience filming out there?
Oh, it was very interesting, you know. I mean, definitely because I wanted to get in touch with that particular part of the world. You know, I thought it was important for the film that you had that connection, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many things that happen in Jerusalem, you know, so many events there. I think it's a very peculiar place, you know, and I thought I needed to get some shots from there.
Mm-hmm. Now, speaking internationally, you've gone and shown your movie around the world, pretty much in many other countries. What were some of these countries, and what were their reactions? What are some of those experiences?
So we showed. So the film was in a lot of several film festivals. It went into the Monaco Film Festival, and this was a mainly European and Asian type of audience. I had no idea what to expect out of there. But the reaction was very, very good. As a matter of fact, I think we had one of the most compelling Q&As that we had. You know, typically after the film shows, I go as the director of the film, you know, to talk to the audience, you know, as part of the film festival experience. And we had pretty much, I would say, 95% of the audience remain for the Q&A, and they had very, very interesting questions, you know. There were, you know, people from Japan as well there, and, you know, many came after the show and, you know, told me how much they were, you know, they understood the film, which is, you know, very interesting. But the reactions has been very, very good. But at the same time, I got to say the film is polarizing. Mm-hmm. You know, the film definitely brings up some reactions and people reject it completely. We've seen that I think people just, I think definitely the film is complicated in a sense because it needs the audience participation. You need to engage. One critic from Phoenix, David Ramsey from Channel 5, he said, "This is a very interesting film, but you know, wait until the DVD comes out because you want to watch it many times to really understand it all." And I think it is that type of films. You know, probably you have to watch it many times because you discover something new in it. But for some people that reject the concept, reject the idea of even in the UFO community, you know, in the alien community, there are people that have very strict views of the phenomena, you know, and something is presented that doesn't fit with that view, just like in religion or anything else. There's a tendency of rejecting, you know, an idea that may not fit with what they believe, you know. So I think even in the UFO community, there are, you know, fundamentalists. You
mm-hmm.
know,
there's no doubt about that.
There's no doubt, you know, and it's true for everything, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's very open-minded, you know, religious people that that embrace the film because the film doesn't go into labels. So
right.
It's up to you to, you know, come up with, you know, what you want to believe in it.
Mm-hmm.
But the reactions have been very good throughout. You know, we got several awards for the film in the United States and in Europe. It also played in Egypt, in Cairo. Very interesting reaction because the film uses a lot of, you know, some, you know, Egyptian symbolism, like the Ankh, for
mm-hmm.
instance. And there was a lady that, an Egyptian lady that came after the film, and she said, you know, I saw the film 2 days ago, and I went and bought this for you. And it was an Egyptian picture of an Egyptian Ankh,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I still have it with me. Obviously, I take it everywhere, and it's kind of like a lucky charm.
How cool!
You know?
Cool.
And it was very interesting. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, the mentor of the priest, the older
mm-hmm.
gentleman in the movie, the
mm-hmm.
actor, actually seemed to, in the Q&A, you alluded to him having a sort of wisdom that he shared and
yeah.
helped you with the movie.
I wrote the screenplay without an end.
Mm-hmm.
The whole last 30 minutes, I didn't write it because I thought it was too complicated to write it. And since I was going to shoot it, who cares?
Mm-hmm.
But it took me a long time to really come up with the right answer there. And I think people who had experiences can understand it more than others, perhaps. Because I wanted to take the audience through the different stages, you know, of what an out-of-body experience may look like, maybe, you know. Tom Basham, that's his name, of the actor, that plays Father Daniel, he studied metaphysics for a long time, and he was a practitioner of metaphysics. So he helped me trying to understand a lot of the concepts, you know, because I come from a completely agnostic background and a skeptical background. Basically, I didn't believe in anything.
Mm-hmm.
And he, after talking with him, you know, that was part of my transformation, you know, my understanding of the phenomenon of paranormal. So we had a lot of discussions about metaphysics and what it meant, you know, the whole process that this priest was going through, and where he arrived. So he was instrumental in that aspect. You know.
Mm-hmm. What were some of the pieces of bits of wisdom that he imparted upon you that you remember?
Oh gosh, there are so many.
Oh really?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I have my own concept because I talked to so many witnesses, so many people that had experiences, and then talking to him, it confirmed a lot of those ideas. You know, the idea that we're all one, that is a source of everything, that is what some people call the light.
Mm-hmm.
And I came to also my own conclusions after you know, all the research that I did, you know, and I'm going to say here something that probably is very shocking to many people. But I came to the conclusion that there is no evil. Mm. Even though a lot of people believe in evil and believe in Satan, there is no such thing. What there is the absence of light, is darkness. But evil as entity doesn't exist. What exists is the absence of the light, or, you know, when, and within that context, you can have a lot of evil things going on. But it's not because evil, you know, if you want to call it God or the divine or whatever, did not create evil. All it creates is love and harmony and life and beauty and everything that is good. But it doesn't reach everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So in the areas where there's darkness, hatred, fear, and all those things, is not the source an evil entity, but the source is the absence of the light,
mm-hmm.
which is a very completely different concept to what, you know, many times religions, tell people. So, and it has tremendous implications, because basically the implication means that if you move towards the light, you're going to be more aligned with your source. If you move towards the darkness, you're going to be away from the source and into the area of hatred and fear and all those things that are incredibly negative that have evil consequences.
Mm-hmm.
That's where evil comes from, but not as an entity. So what that means is that, think about the concept of that with hope, right? Evil can be defeated. Just fill it with light.
Mm-hmm.
That's all you need to do.
There are some people that come into these chats, and there are a lot of people who feel that extraterrestrials are demonic and
mm-hmm.
that things coming here are demonic. I guess, how would you address, because I'm sure it's on the mind of some of the people in here, and I'm surprised they haven't piped in yet, how would you address that?
I think it's very consistent with what I'm saying. While mm-hmm. the movie addresses good aliens, and... You know, I'm actually working on a story about the bad ones because I want to address that point, you know, at length. You
right.
know, those entities come from the darkness.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's basically that. I mean, there's a balance between darkness and light. You know, there's always this constant fight. You know, for balance. For mm-hmm. you know. However, I do believe that there's going to be one point when we evolve as humans, you know, to the level where we will conquer darkness. Where darkness, there's not going to be anything, you know, such as darkness, that it will be filled with light.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you beat, you know, evil. But those dark extraterrestrials with, you know, or from another dimension, you know, I don't want to even get into that area right now, come from that absence of light.
Looking in here, thanks for the answer. I think that I think that that's a big reason. Once we had gotten into the QA after the movie, especially, I really, you know, with the movie, it's not so much about words. In fact, there's a lot of parts where there's music and video. And the end of the movie where you talk about the out-of-body experience that you kind of have mm-hmm. people go through, the visuals were just stunning. They were absolutely amazing. They were wonderful. And so when we got to the end of the movie and were able to get to the QA, it was great to hear you, you know, be able to talk about some of the meaning and reasons why you created the movie. So that's why I've been really excited to get you on the show to say things, because I know a lot of people are going to love the way you express some of these concepts, like the one you just did. And I know in the QA also, someone, Maurizio, you know, our mm-hmm. editor-in-chief here, said he had seen a scene, and someone's asking about it in the chat, where they thought a UFO flew by in the scene. Did you examine that and take a look?
You know, I've been when he told me that that actually he saw a UFO in the movie in mm-hmm. one of the scenes where there was not supposed to be a UFO. I was very curious, and I had to sit down with him. I mean, the movie is 2 hours long, and to pinpoint exactly where he saw that, because actually there were three people that saw that in that particular screening. That this is just a regular scene in you know, with a Phoenix guy in the background, and several people already have seen that there was a UFO in the scene. Now I can swear to you that I did not create that.
Yeah.
You know, digitally. So I had to pinpoint exactly what it is, because to analyze, you know, frame by frame, it can take me forever. So I'm waiting for Maurizio to come back from Italy.
Yeah.
And I'm going to sit down with him and pinpoint exactly where that UFO is, because I'm very interested in seeing it myself.
I think I know what scene it is, because I saw it myself, but I thought maybe it was a bird or a bug. And unless you look at it over and over again, it's hard to say.
Right.
So it'll
right.
be interesting.
I'm definitely going to analyze the frames. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm very interested in that. But, you know, I mean, there's a, towards the end, there is a UFO flying. You know, that obviously that was done digitally. Mm-hmm. You know, none of that is real. But, so I was very surprised when he said that.
That's interesting that no one else had said anything.
No. Well, you need an ufologist there to see things like that.
Mm-hmm.
You see.
People looking for it.
Right.
One of the people asked, and I'm sure you've gotten this question. In fact, I think someone asked this question in the Q&A about 2012, and if you think that'll be the point of transformation and what research you've done into the 2012.
I think that there is a direction right now that we're going that will lead to a major transformation of our understanding of the whole phenomena.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's going to be several discoveries in science that is going to confirm some of our beliefs, especially in the area of quantum physics and in nuclear physics, work that is being done at CERN in Europe, that basically they're looking for the God particle, that is going to give a lot of insight into what we call today paranormal activity. But also, I see that there is a trend right now for people to look for real answers. You know, I think the reason is not coincidental that a lot of churches are empty in Europe. And I keep saying those people are not becoming atheists. They're just you know, as curious and looking for meaning as anybody else. But to me, it's an indication that they're looking for higher meaning,
mm-hmm.
you know, for a much more deep understanding of what's going on around us, you know, and perhaps you know, to achieve a higher level of a spiritual development. So it's impossible to have, and this is perhaps is going to be shocking for some people, but it's impossible to have that type of transformation either in 2012 or after that. But I think 2012 is key because of so many trends, scientific trends are accelerating at an incredible rate, that it may well be 2012 where a lot of revelations may happen. I think in order for that to happen, there has to be such a revelation that in a way puts religions out of business or makes religions transform, you know, or become all united in this new understanding, you know, of paranormal activity. Until you have that type of divisions, until you have all those boxes around the world, you know, where I believe this and this is my truth and you believe that and this is that truth, there's not going to be a universal revelation. So when that revelation happens, I think a lot of people that are going to try to keep on with their beliefs, you know, the fundamentalists are going to try, but I think it's going to be a chaotic moment. And I think some of the issues related with 2012 that are, you know, negative or dark or, you know, will have to do with that chaos. You know, the percentage of the population that will not let go of their own beliefs, and they want to, you know, kind of like if you think about it, the case in Guyana, I think it was, you know, when that preacher went with all his people in the, I think it was in the 1970s, late 70s, where they committed suicide. Why that happened? Basically, they completely isolated from the rest of the world, you know, in their beliefs, in their very twisted beliefs, and they decided that since reality didn't fit with their beliefs, they decided to kill themselves. I think that's the chaotic part of the 2012, but it may be that this greater revelation will help us, you know, evolve, continue evolving, and unite, you know, humanity.
You know, you talk about religion adapting, and it's kind of like not adapting quick enough. Not the people are evolving quicker than the people running the church. It seems that, do you see them trying to adapt? It almost seems like when the Vatican had, you know, the head of their observatory astronomer talk about it's okay to believe in extraterrestrials and they're just God's children and it's all right. Do you think that was a step in an attempt to adapt?
No, I think it's an attempt to survive. Because an adaptation is part of survival, right? Because as revelations come in, you know, as our understanding of UFOs and alien activity and the whole paranormal thing becomes more real, they have no choice than to adapt. The church was never leading the cause of UFO, you know, research and activity. They did not come up with that concept. But, you know, once the concept is solid in you know, in the people, in people's mind, they need to adapt to that, or they need to survive, you know, to maintain, you know, their position. I think it's very important to distinguish that from the, oh, you know, they're just coming to an understanding that this is reality. If you look at science advance in you know, in humanity throughout the years, the church always, you know, was kind of behind, and then once it's completely proven, then they adapted, you know, but it was never leading the way. It happened to many, you know, like Galileo Galilei, right? I mean, he was almost killed because of his discoveries. So I think you got to be careful there, you know, in terms of how much of an ally, you know, those institutions are.
Right. Well, we've only got a few minutes left. So what's next? Do you have some more screenings planned? What's next for the movie?
So we're doing, we're getting emails from everywhere, you know, to show the film. This is an independent film, so we don't have the backing of, you know, Hollywood studio, nor we want it. And so we're coming up with creative ways to show the film to as many people as possible and as free as possible, you know. It's not really our intention to, you know, we want people to see it, you know. And so we're coming up with, and I hope that I could announce it tonight, but unfortunately we had some technical difficulties. But we're going to have an online viewing where people can go to our website and view the film just like you would watch it with Netflix. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to announce, you know, for all your audience, probably in the next 2 weeks, 2 weeks and a half perhaps, so you can give out a code to your audience, and they'll be able to watch the film online. What we're doing right now is looking at the, you know, the technicality of it, because I want people to experience the film the way it should be and not view it on a little window, you know.
Right.
So we're looking at how to make it work, you know, for most people, you know, for most computers. So if you're watching it, you know, from a laptop in Bangladesh or, you know, in Wichita, Kansas, you know, you'll be able to watch the film and experience it the way it should be.
Great.
So we're working on that, and hopefully we have that technology soon in our website.
So keep an eye on the descriptions for the shows, because then I will, as soon as possible, be able to have everybody go to a site where they're going to be able to watch the movie for free. So unfortunately, we weren't able to have that ready by now, but we will have it. We weren't kidding you, people. We're going to get you this this movie for free here really soon.
Yeah, and if of course the DVD will be available the end of the year or early next year.
Okay, well, great. Well, thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you very much.
It's been a great pleasure. I think a lot of people are going to love what you have to say, because, you know, we have a lot of nuts and bolts type of people on, and sometimes we get a touch on some of these subjects, but it's great to talk about, you know, just kind of these more out there kind of concepts, because I agree that it's much more difficult to define what's going on here than just to say good or bad or physical or non-physical or multidimensional or not. Some of these things, like multidimensional, we don't even know how to really define a term like that. So I'm excited about that. I'm excited our next guest is actually going to be another in the media person. Bryce Zabel is his name, and he actually has worked with Spielberg on Taken. He did the TV show Dark Skies. I'm not sure if anybody saw that, and if you're into the evil aliens, that's what that series was about. But he's going to talk to us about his insights into the media. He's got a new movie coming up on MJ12 as well. So I'm really excited about that. We are out of time. Thank you again for coming on the show. And talk to everyone later. Let me cue the close music.
come here today to
build a nation, win the violence, and legal structure that will not promptly collapse upon our departure, and now it is gone. Here was an America ready to give leadership to an entire world. There is another, like my three brothers, and above all, they have been buried to feed the hungry. My deep thanks for your kindness and for your concern.